Lecture 34. We're in the middle of the free scalar field theory. We had come to a formula for evaluating our functional integral. We call the normalization of our quantity is, so when j is 0, we should have 1. Therefore, we don't have to worry about the prefactor. All we have to do is worry about the exponent. The exponent we obtained by extremizing the classical action. We're still using units of h bar equals 1 equals c, the velocity of light. J of x delta f, find for Feynman, x minus y, j of y, dn x dn y, we're in n space-time dimensions, delta f of x minus y was defined the following way, minus 1 over 2 pi to power n, integral e to the I k dot x minus y in n dimensions, k squared minus m squared plus I epsilon dnk. We want to pass to the so-called Euclidean field theory, or free field theory in particular. You will remember when we dealt with the Wiener measure, we had true probabilities to deal with, and when we dealt with quantum mechanics, our diffusion constant effectively became pure imaginary. Now we're going the other way. We're starting from the quantum mechanics and going into a probabilistic version of the equations. Closer analogy to the Wiener process. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to rotate the time axis. The t axis will be rotated to minus it. So it's rotated 90 degrees in the complex plane. Corresponding rotation will take place of the quantity delta F, and we'll pick up an I from that because of the rotation of the K vector. So we'll get one I to go with this I, and that will become a minus quantity. So we'll call that thing S over here. S stands for Schwinger, and that is equal to e to the minus 1/2 j of x g of x minus y j of y dn x dn y. I use the same notation for the vectors x, vector y, even though one of the coordinates has been rotated by 90 degrees. I don't think that should cause a major difficulty.
Why does s depend on h?
S of 0 depends on j, thank you very much. And the function g of x is the rotated form of this. It's 1 over 2 pi to power n, k squared plus m squared dnk e to the I k dot x. So that's the Fourier transform of a term in the denominator, where this is the sum of k1 squared plus, well, k1 squared plus k2 squared plus kn squared. That's in a Euclidean space question.
You said that g of x is the rotated form of delta sub f.
And accounting for the I factor as well, right. Okay. So, this is a very fundamental equation. It is straightforward to show that SO of J is continuous in the field J. You remember when we talked about nuclear spaces very, very briefly? So I'm going to put on some notion of continuity on the fields J, make them very, very smooth. This function is clearly continuous. I mean, it's, for heaven's sakes, it's a quadratic in these, exponential of a quadratic in these guys. It's also what we call positive definite. So I take J sub K minus J sub L, and I sum on alpha K star alpha L, and this will be greater than or equal to zero. It's also normalized, S0 evaluated when J equals zero is unity. And these were the conditions according to the Bochner-Minlos theorem. Told us that S0 of J was actually the Fourier transform. Now I'm going to use the same phi again, of a bona fide measure. I will put F down here for free, but its arguments are not coordinates on the real line, like we did for the Wiener measure. These are arguments are fields. A very transcendental concept, but this is a bona fide, countably additive probability measure. Now, nevertheless, it is still extremely useful to write that in a formal form, and I do it again this way, integral j phi dnx minus, I'm going to need that space here, minus 1/2 integral gradient phi quantity squared plus m squared phi squared dnx d phi. So there is the formal linear functional approach to writing this measure. This is the formal form for the measure on fields. You can see a certain analogy with the Wiener process, where we had before, we had time derivative of x dot squared, with a minus 1/2 indeed and everything in there, and a curly dx on the x. But this is now extended to fields.
Your gradient is the
gradient, the gradient of phi squared means the summation d phi by d x j quantity squared j equals 1, 2, n, all n dimensions. So it's absolutely positive. When I would take its Fourier transform, I would pick up a plus ik and a minus ik, and that will give me the positive values of the k squared that stand here. Now, we're not going to use that particular formula too much. I mean, this one, let us say, we'll refer to it, but we won't use it too much. This is a Gaussian measure. And even in my private notation, this is what I call a normal measure, because the mean of the field values are identical to zero. The mean, by the way, of anything would be defined by that anything integrated against our countably additive measure. But we also know from the Gaussian property what this quantity is. SOJ on the basis of what any normal measure looks like will be e to the minus 1/2 integral j of x, j of y, times the correlation function between phi of x and phi of y, dnx, dny. So that means the coefficient we have here, which I've called g, is indeed nothing more than the expectation value of the two fields, phi x, phi y, in our measure. Remember our prescriptions for a stationary process. A stationary process was one where we could translate the testing function, j, and it would remain unchanged. So if I translate both j here and j here by the same amount, add a u plus a u here, translate them, then by a change of variables, the u would add with the x, subtract over here, and they would cancel. So this thing is a stationary process, and it's also an ergodic process. Your turn. Question?
Yes. Is there a time-ordered product in the correlation?
Question is, are we dealing with time-ordered products? Time-ordered products refer to operators, operators only. Nothing here is an operator. These are all C number, albeit perhaps distributional valued functions, but this thing is absolutely symmetric in its argument because these are functions, and as such, they can interchange their place. And this function is clearly symmetric under plus and minus because I changed the sign of k, and the integrand is even. So that's a symmetric function. In fact, we're going to spend a few minutes discussing the properties of that g, which will be important in our further analysis.
John?
Question.
What guarantees that the product is a function of x minus y and g?
If it is a stationary distribution, the question is, why is it a function of x minus y, even though it doesn't look that way here? That's because it's a stationary distribution. And the analog actually is not as good with the Wiener process as it is with our friend the Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process. The Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process had a had a expectation value x of t, x of u average, which was 1/2 e to the minus absolute t minus u. So that gave it a stationary feature as well. And if you recall, this was basically the Fourier transform. I won't have the coefficients exactly right. D omega, or 1 plus omega squared, maybe a 1 over pi, maybe there's more to it. In any case, this measure here associated with this is absolutely continuous, if you remember our definitions of absolute continuity. Namely, there is a bona fide L1 function multiplying the d omega. And as such, that meant that this was an ergodic process as well. We talked about that when we talked about the Ornstein-Uhlenbeck, and the same, very much the same looking formula, 1 over a constant plus the variable of integration squared, is our quantity that goes into making our two-point function here, and this is also a stationary and ergodic process. Okay. Question.
John.
Yes.
You've just given us what appears to be a circular argument.
Thank you.
You went over here and said g of x minus y, and then you added u to it, and you did that trick, and you said fine, s0 j is stationary. Then in response to Moodley's question, you came back and said g is g of x minus y because it's stationary. But you used the fact that it was x minus y.
Well,
I mean, what's going on?
Okay, a stationary process, let's go back to Ornstein-Uhlenbeck. Stationary process is one with the following property, that all its moments, x of tl, are invariant if I translate them all by an equivalent amount. And so that would be the same as these moments, x of tl, like that. So this is independent of the tau, independent of the thing. For example, the number of students in this classroom on Wednesdays is similar to the number of students on Fridays. It doesn't matter what day I take an ensemble average here. So that's what stationarity means. Stationary processes do not have to be ergodic. I gave you my toy example
of the bumblebees. Here's a room full of bumblebees. You know, they fly around. Here's another one, they fly around. But if I have a wall in the middle, these guys stay over here, these guys stay over here. This is a stationary process. It's going to look the same whether I look at it today or tomorrow, but it's not ergodic, meaning this particular bee will not experience the properties of the ensemble. He will never get on this side. On the other hand, this is both stationary and ergodic in our rough approximate sense that any of this would be fulfill those conditions. Further questions, please. We're going to take up a careful study of the function G now. Yes, question.
As a question of what follows from what, you compute the correlation phi A to y phi x from this formula. Is that?
Yes, absolutely right.
That's how you.
That's how I compute it. This, I have done the path integral. I did the path integral to get me here. I moved that over into Euclidean space, which gave me a related formula here. I used Bochner-Minlow's to tell you that that is this kind of thing. Then I tell you that certain averages are to be made within that particular measure. I already know the answer of that. We're soon going to expand this in a power series and relate this answer to the integral of all possible correlation functions.
Did we have a name for G, like delta F is the Feynman kernel?
Question is, did we have a name for capital G? And no, different authors call it different things, so I don't think there's a serious name for that. Capital C is a little bit more common than G. C for correlation function, I mean, that's pretty weak. But I use C for characteristic function, and I felt I needed to have another letter. Okay. Let us turn to a study of capital G. And here it is. So it's not my practice, you may have noticed, to evaluate integrals. And so this may be exactly evaluable in terms of some special functions in some particular dimensional space where n is some particular number. I'm not interested in that. I'm going to give you a qualitative overview of this quantum field theory story. So I'm interested in a qualitative understanding of G of X. A priori, the Fourier transform of a positive function is not necessarily positive. I don't know that to begin with. So I want to learn that. So I'm going to find an alternative representation for this quantity. So first I recognize that this thing in the denominator I can write as e to the minus alpha k squared plus m squared, integrate from 0 to infinity d alpha. That puts that quantity into the denominator. That's an alternative definition for that. And then I do my Fourier transform on top of that. I'm going to interchange the order of integration and do the k's first. This quantity is going to be a distribution. It's not going to be well defined at all values of x. In particular, at x equals 0, we can immediately see that whenever n is 2 or higher, this quantity will be infinite. So we may have to pay a little price for this. When I talk about interchange of the orders of integration, I do it in the sense of distributions, that you should be integrating over the x and doing it with a smoother function, but nevertheless. So when I do that, then I have my k integrations to do first. dnk, like that.
Shouldn't be an x, the first m?
E to the ik dot x?
Yeah.
minus alpha k squared plus and minus alpha m squared. So I do the k. Well, this is just a Gaussian integral for each k. So that gives me an e to the minus 1 over 4 alpha. I get an x squared for each component of that. They all add up together, and I get the vector x squared minus alpha m squared. And I'm going to pick up some alpha coefficients when I do that, so I can pick up a I pick up a pi to the n by 2 in front. 2 over pi to the n was already there, and then I get a 1 over alpha to the n by 2, and then I have my d alpha integration left. So I've reduced everything to a one-dimensional integral, and that alpha integral goes from 0 to infinity. I want to double-check that the integral is well-defined. So at alpha going to 0, I have a potential singularity here. But I also have a 1 over alpha in the exponent, e to the minus something over alpha. And so long as x is not 0, we've already agreed that at x equals 0, we're going to get an infinity. When x is not 0, then I get a 1 over e to the minus 1 over alpha. That will strongly suppress any singularity that might come from that. So at alpha equal plus infinity, I have this term here. But I may not even need that term to provide convergence, because for sufficiently large n, and that means three dimensions or larger, this will be 1 over alpha to the 3 halves, for example, and that would be integrable at infinity. So I don't even need that m to provide that. So my expression is well-defined. And the first thing I observe, that it is always positive. It's a real quantity and always positive, real and positive. Okay. Now I want to focus on its behavior for small x. So I'm interested in the domain where mx double dot is much, much less than 1. We'll study that for n equals 3 or greater, and n equals 2. Those are two special cases to deal with. And then finally, we'll talk about its behavior when mx is much, much greater than 1. So we'll have a feel for that function for large and small argument behavior. Okay. So, first off, let us change variables. Now, I'm going to introduce you to a variable change here technique. We're going to let alpha become alpha times x squared. Alpha is going to emit an x squared, just like particle physics. Okay? Particles emit other particles. So my alpha is going to emit an x squared. That means it's going to cancel that guy. So that's the whole point of that. E to the minus 1 over 4 alpha. It's going to appear up there. E to the minus alpha mx magnitude squared. D alpha and 1 over alpha to the n by 2. Well, I'm going to pick up some x's from this. I pick up an x squared in the numerator, and I pick up an x to the power n in the denominator. So that's a 1 over absolute x to the n minus 2. And then I have my numerical factors out front here, which for the moment I will leave to be the same. Pi n by 2 over 2 pi n. And so I now have my integral from 0 to infinity. Let's focus now on the case n greater than or equal to 3. So this is g. This is no approximation. For n greater than or equal to 3 and mx, m times x, much, much smaller than 1, this is not helping the conversion. It's not necessary to the conversion. I can forget it. So my answer is g of x is approximately, for small arguments like that, 2 pi to the n, 1 over absolute x to the n minus 2, integral 0 to infinity, 1 over alpha to the n by 2, e to the minus 1 over 4 alpha d alpha. Now, I'm going to change variables. Alpha goes to
1 over, so 4 alpha actually, goes to 1 over beta, let's call it. So I put that e to the minus beta, and then that becomes, with a change of limits, that becomes beta to the n over 2 minus 2. Then I pick up a 4 to the n over 2 minus 1. I had a 2 to the n before, and then a pi to the n by 2 before. And 1 over x to the n minus 2. Integral 0 to infinity d beta. Okay, 4 to the n by 2, well, take the square root of that, that's 2 to the n, that cancels that. So I get a 1 over 4, pi to the n over 2, x to the n minus 2, and this is the definition of the gamma function. So that is gamma of n over 2 minus 1. So that is the behavior for n greater than or equal to 3 when mx is much, much smaller than 1. In fact, if m is identically 0, then this will always be smaller than 1, and this is then the exact answer for m equals 0. You know one of those situations where n equals 3, and you know that by heart. So let's look at that. That's 1 over 4 pi to the 3 halves, x to the power 1, and gamma to the 1 half. Well, gamma to the 1 half is square root of pi, kills one of those, that's 1 over 4 pi modulus x, which you know as the Coulomb-Green's function.
Okay. Let's look at the special case n equals 2.
Two space-time dimensions, that's one time and one space, is a very good laboratory for doing comparatively simple quantum field theory studies. So that can be a problem of interest. We have g of x, in this case, is simply pi over 2 pi quantity squared. I'm taking a special choice of 2, of n now, of course. And then I have integral 0 to infinity d alpha, alpha to the first power, as my n over 2 right here, when n is 2. And then I have e to the minus 1 over 4 alpha minus alpha mx quantity squared d alpha, exact formula for n equals 2. Now, suppose I wanted, so for alpha equals 0, this term really helps take any singularity away. But at alpha equals infinity, where before I could throw away this term, now I cannot throw it away. I cannot throw it away. Because at infinity, I have a d alpha over alpha. That term doesn't help me anymore. D alpha over alpha is divergent at infinity. So I need that term. I have to be more careful. What I don't need is to worry about small alpha. Now I have to worry about big alpha. So to all intents and purposes, our behavior, let's cancel one of these, so that's 1 over 4 pi, is going to be integral from 1 to infinity d alpha over alpha, e to the minus alpha mx quantity squared d alpha. What I've done is throw away the small alpha, change this behavior here. That will only add a finite number to this, and our answer is going to be a divergent quantity, so that will not influence that. So we have this situation. Okay, let me continue over here.
You have two d alphas in those formulas?
Do I have two d alphas? Well, then I don't have to put one in the next formula, it would seem, right?
Yes, I do, don't I?
I had one at the end and one at the beginning. You know, I was an adult person, maybe 50, a long-time scientist, when I saw for the first time an equation of the following form, sine cubed x cosine 3x dx, where the dx stood in the middle. I was almost ill. Can you imagine how stupid that is? You know, it's simple notation. And of course, I've now become to realize that that can be useful to do that occasionally. So put in the front, the back, or the middle.
Anyway, you...
I submit that it's not uncommon to see sine theta d phi times some integrand.
Yes. Okay. But for a single integral, you know, that would be true. Okay, here we go. So let's pick over that previous formula, 1 over 4 pi, 1 to infinity d alpha over alpha, e to the minus alpha mx quantity squared. No more d alphas, please. Okay, we're going to now change variables. Alpha is e to the u. That means I go from 0 to infinity. Du, e to the minus e to the u, multiplied by this, but also I can raise that to 2 natural log of m absolute x there. So that is my expression now, g of x. I'm going to get rid of this by trans... Question? Okay. So just as we emitted a particle before when we changed variables, alpha going to alpha x squared, that was a multiplicative type of particle process. This is an additive type of process. I'm going to let u squirt out a negative 2 lambda m x. I will cancel it here, do nothing here, and put the opposite effect onto the integral limits. These are good rules to remember, I believe. So that becomes 2 natural log mx 1 over 4 pi infinity du e to the minus u. So what is happening here? As mx becomes extremely small,
was that not e to the minus e to the u?
Yeah, there's a missing. Oh, yeah. Okay. Right. E to the u. Thank you very much. As mx becomes extremely small, larger than that becomes a negative number. This is a negative, becoming a very negative number. When I'm dealing with negative u, e to the minus u value up here, that's essentially like zero. E to the zero is like one. So this term is again approximately like du 2 natural log m absolute x up to 0. I don't care what happens over there. That's finite. 1 over 4 pi. And I've made the approximation that for supremely negative numbers here, this is essentially e to the minus a large number. Therefore, it's essentially 0. So this gives me minus 2 natural log m absolute x over 4 pi, or the answer is g of x behaves as minus 1 over 2 pi natural log mx in the case n equals 2. So it's singular, all right, but it's a much less singular singularity, whereas our case before, which is here, is a stronger singularity and getting more singular, of course, as n gets larger.
I want to ask what happens.
Questions.
That formula, if you take n to 2, take the limit as n goes to 2?
Well, it was based on, the question is, can I take n equals 2 and get something out of that?
M has disappeared.
So that's going to be difficult. But I got to here by dropping this term. And so it is now illegitimate to go back and say what happens if n equals 2, because that term was critical. But it is a healthy instinct, and physicists love it, to try to interchange any operations they can. Let's take this formula. Which formula do I want? I guess I want this formula. This will be okay. No, it will do this one. Mx quantity squared d alpha. Let's take that formula and now pass to the other limit when mx behavior is large. do I do that? I'm going to let alpha this time squirt out at 1 over m absolute x by itself. That will take one of them away here. It will put one back here up in the exponent. And I get some contribution from the alphas downstairs. And that's going to look like mx to the n over 2 minus 1, mx to the 1 half. I'm putting in all the gory detail. That comes from the alpha and this alpha. Then I have 0 to infinity. I still have the alpha downstairs, n by 2, the alpha. And I guess I have the pi n by 2 and the 2 pi n. So that's still an absolutely exact formula as long as mx is different from 0. Now I can begin to use stationary phase approximation or steepest descent on this integral. E to the minus mx times alpha plus 1 over 4 alpha. I extremize that. So the alpha, set it to be 0. That's 1 minus 4 alpha squared. So alpha happens at the 1 half point. Therefore, I set alpha equal to 1 half plus a small deviation. And you'll find that that becomes e to the minus absolute x. I get a 1 half from here and a 1 half from here, so I get a 1. And then I get a minus mx lambda squared, the Gaussian term. Turns out to have a factor 2 with it. All this other stuff in front. So I've only made a modification to this term. Okay. I'm looking at the clock because several of our students were here last time, but there was not enough pages in the student evaluation packet for the registered students each to contribute. So we have some more pages, and we're going to have to play student evaluation again for a few extra students. And so I'm going to have to quit in a moment or two. Having given you a moment to copy things now, we can go back to this. D alpha will be D lambda. We have a 1 over alpha to the n by 2 here, but that's approximated in leading order by this half business, so that becomes another factor of 2 to the n by 2 in front. And we have a pi to the n by 2 still there. We have 2 pi to the n, and we have the m, x, and x factors. I don't have room to write them, but all of these things right here. Okay, so let me just quote the answer for you. G of x, after we do this saddle point approximation, is equal to 1 over 2 to the n plus 1 over 2 pi the n minus 1 over 2 m x to the n over 2 minus 1 x to the n minus 2 e to the minus m x. So it's a kind of interesting thing. I don't think I thought about it too much before, but the short distance singularity, which is 1 over n minus 2, is not preserved in the long distance behavior, except I made a mistake here. This is n minus 3 over 2. So it only in three dimensions is that preserved. So g in three dimensions, 3 plus 1 is 4 over 2, so that's 1 over 4, pi to the 1 first power, x down here to that's unity, e to the minus mx, that's our standard familiar expression, say, for a Yukawa-type potential. But otherwise, the behavior at large x will have a different
fall off than it does for small x because of this vector right here. Okay, so this these formulas hold for when m x is much, much greater than 1. And with that, I will stop some minutes early and ask Thomas to please continue one more time.